This is our masterclass on AI. With me today, I have Arta, who is actually an expert on anything to do with AI, and it was her idea to get this masterclass going. So really big thank you to her. First of all, as we are coming together with a lot of different people from different branches, please read our antitrust guidelines. This has to do with any competitive interest that may be discussed or any information being disclosed during these sessions. Anything said in here is confidential. However, if you feel like one of the practices being discussed may be in breach of the antitrust guidelines, do please notify us and we will correct that immediately and switch subject or whatever we need to do to make sure that we don't violate the antitrust guidelines. So just like another 30 seconds for you all to go through these guidelines. And in the meantime, I will already give the word to Arta. Arta, welcome. And yeah, up to you.
Thank you, Vincent, for kind introduction and very efficient navigation of antitrust guidelines. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome. As Vincent already introduced me, I'm Arta. Some of you already know me from the corporate world, from the traditional corporate strategy life. I can hear myself in the background. If we keep all the participants muted for now. And other people that I'm already seeing that are joining can all know me from the startup AI world. I've spent more than a decade in both opposite environment to actually get the best of the both the strategic thinking and the big scoping of the corporates, the ability to scale the big initiatives across the globe. And on the other hand, the innovation and disruption of startups and AI agendas. So, Joe and Vincent, would you like to wait another minute for people to join? We have 88 people joining now, or we can start off. I will just share my screen in the meantime.
I think we can go ahead and start, Arta.
Yeah.
Great. I will just try to share my screen. Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yes, perfect.
Great. Thank you. So, why we are here today and why we have joined in such a great number. Well, initially, it came as an initiative from different executives in non-traditional environment who actually were so excited about AI and the future developments of technology and future of work. But simply, they would come to me and say, Arta, we don't understand this. We don't know what's happening. We see that it's getting really serious. But the ability to comprehend and to understand all the terms, tools, robots, ChatGPTs, NLPs, MLs, it's absolutely terrifying. So what we can do about it? I've got this question not only from the corporate leaders, but also from governments, from even the non-traditional startups and youth. So today, my purpose is to democratize the knowledge, to simplify it, to structure it, and to speak to you in a way that my parents and my siblings would understand without any background in AI and the future of technology in general. If at any point of time you seem to be confused by some of the terms or you have more questions, please feel welcome to ask in the chat box. We will be monitoring it. And after several parts, I will be stopping and answering a couple of questions. This time, I will try to stick to the time and to free up more time for your questions and interactions. That's why we have a Zoom meeting today. Okay. So, why is this the case that we don't understand what's happening in the world? Well, numbers never lie. And one way how I always find out the root cause of the problems is I look at the numbers. So the numbers are in the favor of the big tech companies. So the top seven companies in the world are dominating the market share, are on top of the stock markets. And dominating the headlines with all of the developments in AI and tech. What does that mean for the rest of the 50% of the companies is that we have to actually find a way how to understand what's happening on the other side in our language. So what are we going to cover today is five fundamentals, I like to call them. Number one is very simple explanation of what AI is and how functional it is, how capable it is of performing certain tasks. Number two, we will talk about how intelligent it is compared to us humans. Number three, we will reflect on what type of AI technology exists in the world. Number four, where we can leverage AI in our business environment. Of course, with this, we will reflect on how it will impact us also on an individual level. And the last but not least is how we can leverage AI today and to take one step closer to understanding this topic. So starting with what is AI, some of the slides that you will see are very small and repetitive from the previous session where we talked about the future of AI and remote work, but I promise it's just a small portion of it. Everything else is going to be new to you. So this slide is actually similar to what I already explained. AI is the only technology in the world that is able to perform all the activities that we humans do. What does that mean? One technology can think like we do, speak, communicate, analyze, draw, be creative, have emotions to a certain degree already now, and respond to queries. Number two, it is the only technology in the world that is operating autonomously, that people don't have the control over. We see lots of discussions about regulating AI and how is that going to be possible. However, when you have a technology that is smarter than Einstein's IQ, then controlling it is going to be a challenge. And this is actually the only technology that is able to perform autonomously compared to internet, compared to blockchain, metaverses, and the rest of the technology. And number three, it's going to impact us on both personal and professional level. It is the only technology that is actually not asking us if we would like to change and if we would like to adopt it, but it is forcing us to adapt to it sooner or later by the actions that they have already taken. So how functional it is? Well, it immediately starts being more complicated for non-techies, but I always like to draw the comparison with the child. So they say there are actually four types of AI, and their functionality is depending of the level it is right now. So firstly, when we developed the AI, it was purely reactive. Like when a child is born, it's only reacting to our stimuli, how we interact with it, and it's giving us response. Child doesn't have an understanding and knowledge of the environment, what's happening. It's only intuitive of to respond enough. Second type of AI now, it's actually developing as a child, it's becoming a little bit older. So he's picking up what are we talking about? What are the first words that we are asking? What questions are we asking from it? And by repeating this pattern, by repeating questions to a child or repeating certain actions and activities, same AI is actually remembering these tasks and able to perform them as well. So the third level is then a little bit older child from the age of five onwards, when it already has the capacity to understand the emotions of the people, the effect on their actions that it's taking, and it's already intelligent enough to go to the school. And this is actually the point that most of the scientists are battling between, are we in a type two or stage two or stage three? Many people say we are only at the stage two with self-driving cars and the chatbots. But to be honest, we, as far as I've seen, project-based and involved with far future impacting AI. We are very close or almost there for the stage three. Example-wise, of course, here we have given the examples from the movies of The Matrix and Star Wars and robots, but actually that's too dramatic comparison, I would say. It is essentially the ability of AI to be more intelligent than humans, which is already now. And the fourth and the last level is when a child grows up and turns 18 and wants to go out of the family, become an independent person. And this is the stage that AI has not reached yet, where actually it's going to translate into independent species. That is at the point singularity in 10 to predicted in the next 10 to 15 years that AI is going to be at the top of the pyramid, even more powerful than humans. So if we compare that as a child, now we will reflect on how intelligent it can be. What are the levels of intelligence? And people like to call it as a type of capabilities. I think we have someone with mic on. If not an issue, please, I would like you to mute yourself and then later we can chat. So how intelligent then AI can be, and where are we in terms of the intelligence compared to these stages? Well, there are three types of AI. One is they call it narrow or weak or just artificial narrow intelligence, which is able to complete the simple tasks and automate the tasks that do not require any specific thinking, organization, or additional creativity. The second capability would be a general AI, which is AGI, where researchers, this is very old slide actually from MIT a couple of years ago, where researchers were hoping to develop it, but now we are at the stage that we are again fighting, are we in the narrow AI era or we are at the AGI, general AI era? What does that mean and why is it important? For a very simple reason, a general AI is much more intelligent just than a tool AI that has been a narrow one. Narrow one, you can compare it to a calculator, Excel sheet, or any tool that did not interact with you. At the general AI stage, it's already able to interact with you, learn from your interaction questions, and essentially predict what are you going to do next. And in the next couple of slides, we will actually see how is that possible. And the last, but not least, and most, I would say, dystopian version is a super AI that is portrayed as a robot taking over. Apparently, we are still not there, but I genuinely think if we continue with this pace of development and competitive heat, politically wise and government wise and businesses wise, then we have a good chance to already use AI in different spheres, such as political negotiations and so forth. So it's very important for me to outline these two foundations, because majority of the people talk about AI, but they don't understand what are the levels and types of the AI. So the best way to remember it is to compare it to a child growing up from the infant stage to independent stage. Next slide. So, what type of the technology exists? This is going to be the fun part. So now, when we search what type of AI technology exists out there, we get overwhelmed with many charts explaining natural language processing, machines, expert systems, and so forth. And quite frankly, I don't blame people for just rejecting the whole idea of adopting AI, because it's complex. So how I've simplified it for you is, again, in very simple terms. I like to see it as what are the capabilities what people do versus what is the AI technology that is actually replicating that what we do. So there are four aspects that people do. features, let's say. We can see, we can communicate, we can think, and we can perform tasks. So if we can do these four things, then what is the AI technology that can do the same? So if we can see, then AI technology behind that can do exactly what we do is image recognition and machine vision. I'll explain more about each in the later slides, as I will give you the examples. The second classification is the type of AI that communicates with us, and they call it natural language processing. Often these AI terminologies remind me of medicine terms that we don't know what they mean, but they always sound smart. But what is this frankly meaning is that we can ask questions AI. So anything text related where we have the speech and the text, where we can extract the information, where we can classify the information and translate, AI can do at milliseconds, 24/7, and much more productive than us. For example, from the last event, all the commentary that has been given throughout and the question raised, I've run it through AI and asked AI to please classify the questions, classify any positive sentiment, worried or paranoid sentiment, and any additional insights, and it has done it in 50 seconds. So it would take me probably half an hour to read all through the comments and classify them myself. Then the third aspect is thinking. So if seeing and communicating is a basic level of AI, then thinking and doing is more sophisticated level. So they call it machine learning or deep learning and expert systems. What are the differences between all of those? I will explain a bit later, but just keep in mind that the machine learning means that AI is able to learn not only from people, so it's not waiting for our input to teach AI something, but actually it can learn on its own, unlimited amount of time, unlimited resources. And now compare that to our traditional education and how do we actually think that we are competitive in the world if we can only learn one thing at the one time. And the fourth thing is actually doing, performing physical tasks. And here we have robotics, automation, we have humanoid robots like Sophia communicating with others and scaring the future agendas. But essentially, these are the four types of technologies that I like to simplify for the purposes of understanding these big branches, because each and every of it is very, very deep and complicated on its own. I will reflect on what are the types of the technologies, and then we can stop for a couple of questions, of course, if you have one in the meantime. And of course, feel free to comment on what do you perceive as extremely useful versus extremely dangerous. So if we reflect on seeing, we actually interact with AI on a daily basis. And we are not aware of it. We are being watched 24/7, whether we are in the shop, whether we are on the streets, whether we are driving the car, whether we are submitting our application for insurance or banking. All the systems that require fingerprints, facial ID, spatial navigation, GPS, are actually related to the seeing part of the AI, of the image recognition and machine vision. What is the difference between these two? Image recognition is just telling you what is AI seeing on the picture. Is it a dog or cat? Is it just chocolate or shampoo? However, machine vision is able to analyze the surrounding, identify as the image recognition, and also draw the conclusions and predict what is going to be the next step. I think the most dramatic example of machine vision and image recognition is in China with social credit system, where you actually, if you cross the street, you on the red light, you get immediately minus points on your social credit system. And of course, it reflects into your ability to have a job and have employment and so forth. But on the positive end, we have examples where agriculture, especially this is important for the retail and consumer goods, where we are very dependent on our raw resources and how, you know, climate and everything else is depending the quality of the products that we are sourcing, the quality of the ingredients. So AI is now able to identify environments in which different, plants or chocolates, cocoa that is used for chocolates is produced, and define the optimal action for producers and manufacturers to take into consideration. Also, manufacturing-wise, it is extremely important to be able to distinct which of these ingredients and products are actually beneficial for people and which are not. So there is no risk for the consumer itself. And of course, we have mentioned in the banking itself, wherever we are under image recognition and machine vision. Second type of technology is the one that communicates. And this is where genuinely people have the most of the awareness about AI, because we have all heard about ChatGPT, the ability to ask AI any question as simple as sending a text message or asking Google, actually get the most out of it. So how are communication tools, AI tools, reflected? Well, they can be used for just search engines like Google, language translation. Now AI is able to translate all the languages at much higher accuracy than Google Translate. It is able to analyze all of the documents, however complicated they are, whether you are in law or you are a doctor. Unless your handwriting is really disastrous and it's not automated, I think it will struggle with that. But in general, it's able to analyze millions of documents in milliseconds. So if I want to understand AI policies on in EU, China, and the US, it's going to be able to give me a summary, two-page summary of the topics that I genuinely need to take care of. And this is, I think, very most where we have the most of the benefits. Other parts, we have social media monitoring, sentiment analysis. We are able to actually Facebook, Instagram, and all of the social media, including LinkedIn, are constantly monitoring our reactions to posts. And based on our reactions, they are able to personalize content and actually create, to push the content that is going to attract us to spend more time there. So the implications of the communication tool is essentially to the highest degree on impacting our mind, how we think, and what we are going to do about it. One important note to say about all these four types of technologies is that they're not exclusive of each other. So we don't have only image recognition tools or communication tools. These tools are actually all combined together. And when you have combined tools, then you get the generic AI tool that can do everything for you. It can generate a picture. It can generate a new product launch plan, 30 to 90 days, as specific if you want. But you have very niche and specific AI tools that are in depth for specific categories, for example, marketing, supply chain, or any other departments. So the next one is machine learning. This is the part where we say about the thinking, which draws the most of the attention of the scientists, together with the natural language processing with the text. So in very simple terms, AI can learn from either supervised data, from categorized data. Imagine that you are innovation leader, you're looking after portfolio, and you already have the classified data that you analyze in Excel. Well, AI can automatically analyze that in milliseconds, even faster than Power BI and the rest of the tools that we use in corporates, versus the unsupervised learning, where you actually say, I don't know what are the insights behind this. I don't have the categorized data. These are just the consumer feedback that I got, random one. Can you please cluster it for me or identify the patterns between it or reduce it so that it makes sense? So AI is able to actually automatically find the patterns that would take us as professionals days of finding different perspectives, how we are looking at the data. I remember when we would do destination portfolio analysis, we would look from a price angle, format, channel angle, and spotting these patterns has been extremely difficult because the environment is constantly changing and everyone is launching new products and the fragmentation is getting bigger and bigger. So we would always chase and be in a constant rush to evaluate and analyze new insights. So the research companies are actually deploying AI in a high pace because it's adding them, it's actually reducing them time significantly. The purpose of the machine learning model, it can be either to predict the outcome or either to identify the patterns and to define the structures where we don't see. And the last one is the AI technology. It is robotics and humanoid robots. This is, I think, the easiest to understand because we can see it with our eyes. It's not that we are interacting with the internet and seeing what's happening with AI and just looking LinkedIn posts. With robots, we are very clear to see how in retail, we are able to have shopping assistants, robots that are navigating the people where to buy, robots that are actually replacing people in logistics and performing all of the physical tasks that are very difficult for people. But we also have them applicable in many other industries. So there is no untouched. Actually, the more sophisticated the skill is, perhaps they will struggle and they would have need to have more investments to develop robots. But in all cases, AI technology is so democratized now that all of the uses that I've mentioned in the last four slides, you can access it for free or a monthly rate or a subscription fee through ChatGPT, ChatSonic or Bard that I will mention later. But essentially, it's not somewhere far from us or distant. It is already happening and it is free for everyone. So this has huge implications on how we are. How is that going to impact our workplaces? How is this going to impact our companies? Where are we going to be placed in the next couple of years compared to the robots or machines in general? So these were the first three most important bits of understanding of what is the AI, how functional it can get, how intelligent it is, and what types of technologies exist. Please note that, of course, there is much more to it when it comes to types of technologies, but I think these are really the biggest ones that we need to pay attention to and generally come across in the top research companies. So I would like to stop here for the first couple of questions, Joe and Vincent, as I see the chat is red. So
yeah, there are a couple of questions.
But then we can.
So the first one is, Adriana would like to hear about the ethics side of things a little bit. And there is an example of parents of children in Asia who died and are now talking to an avatar which carries the child's memories. So what's your thoughts on this and the ethics behind it?
Wow. We will talk actually about the ethics in the next slide, where we can leverage AI and why it's important. But ethics side of it, now we will actually show how ethical we are because AI is actually learning from people. It's a technology that is observing how we are behaving. Are we competing, killing each other in other countries, discriminating, and so forth? And it's learning from our patterns. And it's giving us the answers based on what we are giving it to him or to her. About children and extra life, spirituality, and so forth, I actually think this is going to be the point where we merge the spirituality and science finally, because so far we have been so we have been split. We don't have much of the evidence how about God and real life and so forth. So I am generally optimistic about the development in that area. I've seen so many news about aliens recently, but I wouldn't like to go into that. But about the ethics, about humans itself, well, it can go as far as having relationship with AI, having a relationship with deceased ones and so forth. That's happening regardless of AI. People communicate with their deceased ones in different ways through different religious practices. AI is just going to democratize it even further. So I'm always optimistic, but also realistic that we can't stop people from doing certain things. But I hope with these sessions that we are going to stimulate people to use it for purposeful actions.
Cool, thanks, Parker. And then one more question is, how is the misuse of AI preventable, such as surveillance, propaganda, and hacking, if it is at all preventable?
Yes, I think that we will reflect now on the next slide, but in a very short answer is awareness, education, and upskilling. If we are unaware that this is happening, if we are completely ignorant to AI and thinking this is far away, and we have no choice but to submit to the system and follow what other people are telling us, then of course we can be the victim there. But information is now the power. We don't have any excuse. AI is telling us all the answers, and we can educate with AI and actually collaborate with AI to come up with the solutions about it. But awareness and holistic strategy is absolutely a must. So I would propose to move on the part four and part five, and then we can dedicate a little bit more time for questions and interactions, if that's okay.
Perfect. There are a couple more questions, but I think they can wait till the next section.
Okay, great. So how are these technologies then going to overall impact us in general, and why we should care? I think I've mentioned even in the previous session that 80% of the businesses are at the risk of the failure. 300 to 400 million jobs are at the risk. And just yesterday, a couple of days ago, actually, I found out the research that says that 8 out of 10 women in the US are mostly at the risk of automation compared to 6 out of 10 men, even though we are underrepresented in our workplaces. And this is due to the nature of our work and what do we do as women in workplaces. So it's extremely important to take this as a wake-up call and to educate as much as possible and to take action. How the work is going to be completed already now, we see that all of the layoffs and all of the change of the landscape of 300,000-400,000 people being laid off, it's not only because of the economics and inflation, but it is because the companies are buying AIs, automated systems and robotics, integrating them and disregarding the ethical side, which is taking care of people in the first place. Who will do the work? Also, I came across the statistics that now half of the US workforce has transitioned to gig economy. We have no more permanent, more employees that are permanent versus temporary ones. And the fractional workers, which are working as intrapreneurs and have multiple streams of income, is definitely becoming a new must to adapt to the new world. And where it will be completed, so far, we have been mandated to Our access to work, information, and opportunities is based on the location. But what happens when 80% of the jobs get eliminated? Was everyone going to go to London or New York or Silicon Valley or wherever it is? Definitely not. What we see is a big shift, or employees actually understanding that they have to work remotely and be open to the global market. Otherwise, first, they don't have enough AI experts in one place. They will not come just for the sake of coming. And secondly, the customers and clients are actually decentralizing and going from one hubs in one place to actually more localized spheres. So even in the last presentation, we said, if AI can do everything instead of you, what is the future of people, businesses, all these skills and tools that we have in place? How do we matter? So I just want to point out the benefits and the risks. The benefits are really disproportional. We see a huge amount of increase of productivity, profitability, sales, efficiency, operational costs, and customer acquisition costs. That has not ever been possible. And people are actually becoming entrepreneurs and solopreneurs because the level and the barriers are actually lower. So that's a positive out of all the paranoid things that we will talk about. But the risks are genuinely there. As I mentioned, 300 million job losses, job polarization, where we will have extremely skilled people in AI and those who will have to downgrade because they don't have the means or the knowledge or access to information that we are sharing today. And definitely there are ethical and privacy dilemmas and genuinely human dilemmas that we need to solve collectively as a society, united. This is not a point about one corporate after another. This is not about the domination. This is actually about collaborating and figuring out on our own what are the values and the ethical standards that we will set up as a company for AI. And we are going to collaborate with people in the same industry, in this lead network, to actually make sure that we institutionalize these actions. So where AI is actually being leveraged right now and how big of the impact it is, this is a chart from McKinsey that has surprised me. It's been published just a couple of days or weeks ago. The biggest impact actually that's bringing up AI is in terms of the functional spend and the impact in billions is when AI is being used in sales, marketing, product development, software engineering, and operations, also R&D. However, what surprised me the most is, where is HR here? Talent and organization. We are talking about the technology that is going to extremely reverse the point of human existence and the existence of companies, but HR is still not on the list and it's not being perceived as impactful, even though our lives are at the stake. So very interesting finding, and also strategy, procurement and supply chain lower on the list. I genuinely think based on the interactions that I have with other companies is that this is where we can make the biggest of the impact. We have more than half of the world starving, not having basic means to an end. We don't have accessibility to certain areas. We take lots of time to publish and to launch our products, and we have a big struggle on how to serve underdeveloped market. And this is the place where AI will have to play a role of empowerment rather than oppression. So specifically function-wise, I just wanted to call out a couple of functions, and first HR, because it has been so low on the McKinsey list that I genuinely wanted to, at least to those who are in HR right now, please pay attention that, yes, AI can be used in recruiting, attracting the talent and keeping the talent, but the bigger agenda is how are we going to upskill the traditional workforce in traditional corporates in such a way that they will feel empowered rather than scared of using new technologies? As I said, we need to democratize it in such a way that we all feel comfortable, because no one likes change, especially the disruptive one. And how we can use AI in HR to actually remove and offload all the operational things that HR unfortunately has to conduct, and carve in that time to take that time to actually connect with employees and to create the real relationships. So that is one of the areas that I'm seeing that some of the companies are doing extremely well, and some of the companies are completely disregarding. And I'm hoping that this polarization will actually stop, as genuinely is only hurting people short-term and long-term. Marketing and sales-wise, at any point of marketing and sales, everything that we are doing now, for example, in corporates, we take at least a year or 2 years to launch a product globally. It can all be optimized and automated at any point of time, from the reach till the act, conversion and engagement level. From a customer and client side, everything can be optimized to the point that, again, we are serving, we can serve our customers and clients in such a better way if we offload the things that are irrelevant. Technology that can actually help here varies from machine learning, from AI-generated content. My favorite is actually if you are about to launch a product, remember that we need to have the headshots and pack shots and whatever. And create all the marketing campaigns. Now, one AI tool can generate, for example, 50 reels, Instagram reels, different tone of voice, different background and so forth, without spending, I think, $100 for the membership. That would take thousands and thousands of dollars for the design agencies to come up with and to send us back and to revise it. So now AI can do absolutely everything the same. So where do our skills play? Importance is in creativity and making sure that what's the strategy behind it? So are we just launching the products for the sake of launching them and getting the profitability, or actually we are being competitive on a purpose level, where we are serving the causes and serving the communities that actually have the need to have these products. Product management, again, of those who have been in innovation management, they know that we all have to go through the gatekeeping process. It is lengthy. We need to review the documents. We need to evaluate which projects we are going to invest in and which not. Actually, all of that can, again, be extremely optimized, simplified. And where I found it most useful in portfolio management, comparing, clustering and classifying the projects itself, because in corporates we work a lot in silo and there is much happening without us knowing. So this causes us to lose money, time and energy through different projects. But in this way, AI can actually identify same projects. It can take the learnings. It can personalize the learnings in the way that you think it's the best for you, on an individual basis, not a collective basis. It can do also that, but enable the scale at the faster rate, so that again, innovation leaders can focus on the real need behind the product. Finance and investment. I genuinely think companies underestimate this part. Everyone is trying to solve different problems with AI, but not many, except in the finance industry. Of course, in banking, they are paying a lot of attention. But the biggest problem that people have in companies and personally wise is how to make money, how to make meets ends, how to reach 80% of margin, how to set up the amazing pricing, what are the revenues model that matters. All of these questions can actually be answered and co-created with AI in just a couple of seconds. Last, I think, from the department and the functional point, supply chain and operations, definitely something that is not optimized so far in traditional industries. I genuinely think we all know by far that we can optimize from the transport till the forecasting, inventory, warehouse, stocks and business processes. But essentially, how do we reflect on supply chain and operations to enable those that are not included in the supply chain in decentralized areas to actually benefit from this technology, and corporate also to benefit from the collaboration from local suppliers and being more connected on that end? And the last bit, and then we will take on the questions for the next 10 minutes, is, okay, Arta, now we know what's AI, what are the types of AI technologies, how we can leverage it and why we should leverage it in different departments and on a business and professional level. Know how I can do it. In the last session, I've talked actually about the strategy behind it, but this time I actually wanted to change something, and that is to make a short-term approach for your sake. What does that mean is to actually say what we can do today, like in the next half an hour. One is identify where do you spend the most of the time and money? Where is the problem that you are trying to solve with AI or without? Where do you genuinely have issues? Once you have identified these problems, it is up to the literally free tools that I can even show if we have some time after taking questions, to try out at least these top three tools that I really love using. Of course, ChatGPT, everyone has heard of it, but I don't think many have heard of WriteSonic and Bard AI that's developed by Google. It is the same type of general AI, but it has different interfaces, and some of them are more voice-oriented, some of them are picture-oriented, some of them are very great at thinking. So I think one action that you can take from today is to say, where do I have a problem? Create a profile. It will take you probably 1 minute or less, and ask a question. Asking questions is going to be the key at the age of AI. And it is something that we should all remember, that when we were kids, we were asking so many whys. And when we grow up, we stopped asking because we feel embarrassed or ashamed, or we just don't feel competent enough. Now is the time to actually reverse that logic and actually even ask your kids or youth that you're surrounded with, what are their concerns and how are they anticipating the world going forward? Because this is going to be not only tremendous shifts for corporates that are in the business for the last hundreds of years, but also for us youth that essentially have spent so many times in degrees and education that is literally obsolete right now. So, and the last step is, once you have tried out and once you have the questions, co-create with AI business experts. Here I'm saying business experts because the technology experts that I'm seeing in the market are really driving the product thinking, which product you should use. But this is not about the product and this is not about the tools. We can make the special session for that. No problem. It's an exciting area. But where the bigger strength and bigger collaboration needs to happen is the holistic strategy on a business level, on a department level, and individual level. What does that mean for you? So, to conclude, as the world becomes more artificial, I genuinely think it's time to be more human and to reflect on the abilities that we have, much more than just being at work and doing the activities to sustain our living. So with that said, I'm here to engage now with you for your questions. And of course, please, outside of this session, please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm very happy to engage with you at any point.
Thanks, Arta. We do have quite a lot of questions. So I'm just going to go through, I'll try and group some together. And I think it's fine for me to say if we don't get through all of the questions, Arta, you're happy to answer them afterwards if people are interested.
Absolutely.
So the first one we have is from Ella. What is the choice What choice do we have as human beings, employees, citizens, to decide our level of interaction with AI, or is it a continuation of the motto, business as always?
Thank you for question, Ella. If I'm going to, always be honest and direct with everyone. That's my life value of being transparent. We don't have a choice to pick if we want to engage with it or not. Of course, what we can, there are two scenarios. And there is an excellent book called Scary Smart by Mo Gavdat, ex-chief business officer, that explains the future of AI. Where he says either we are going to create the utopia and learn to embrace AI in a way that is really comfortable for us and it's serving us, it's doing the work for us so that we don't need to pay to live, or we are going to go off grid. These are the two options that actually come up. I am, of course, we can work remotely and go off grid, no problem, but essentially active asking and active collaboration and communication in this area is the key, as the power is the knowledge. Now, what I suggest to people most of the time is whenever you get a new product, or whenever the government starts imposing new rules, or whenever companies come up with new policies that are in a public domain, I'm not speaking about confidential information, you can take it, copy-paste it in one of these tools that I've showed you and say, please synthesize this into 10 points and highlight the most riskiest area for humans. So that you understand what are the implications of it, because majority of the policy leaders create such a language that you don't understand what are you getting into. We didn't consent on image recognition and being under surveillance in the UK most of the time, but awareness about it and actually being in the places where you are not in there and signing petitions against it is one of the steps that we can take forward.
Thanks, Arta. Then Simon asks if you could comment on the business adoption policies for businesses that currently forbid things like ChatGPT versus early adopters. How long can businesses wait compared to their competitors?
Well, the market will decide for itself. I think businesses that restrict the use, I understand why, but... It's to be honest, it's unbelievable, because genuinely, you are now competing not against people and the companies and employees, but against companies, employees with the most powerful tools in the world. So naturally, you're going to be wiped out of the market. Naturally, you're going to lose your job. And naturally, you will see the drop in your market share value and so forth, because other companies are using it for pricing, for strategy, and so forth. What I advise companies is be paranoid about what others are serving you, of course, in a public domain. Everything that's free, it's not free. But you can, what you can do as corporates is you obviously have lots of resources. You have the ability to integrate these tools internally and to establish the entrepreneurship models with some of these companies, or in best case scenario, buy them. And integrate them for yourself with the highest level of confidentiality and non-intrusion. This is what governments are doing. This is what businesses, competitive businesses are doing. And for employees that are genuinely wanting to optimize their time, the best way, what I can advise is, I will not say anything provocational, but I will say why do we even need AI? In the first place, why do we need to summarize 50 pages of a report that no one will ever read or remember, or that's going to be obsolete in 2 weeks' time? So optimizing even before AI is necessary, and mindset shift is super, super critical to eliminate the chains that we have created around ourselves.
Thanks, Arthur. We have about 5 minutes left for questions, so I'll try and go through as many as possible. But while we do, Stephanie, can you put the survey up on screen? We're still going to answer questions, but if we could also ask everyone just to do our feedback poll so that we can also get some answers on our events and how you've enjoyed it. And we will continue to ask questions at the same time. So Arthur, Beatrice is curious to know how AI and new technologies can be used in organizational design and not only for automated performance.
Interesting questions, but I think organizational design from which angle? What is the purpose of reshaping the organizational design with AI? So I think the general work design has to completely change. It's not about adopting AI tools and then teaching all employees to use AI. Where we will do work and how we will do work and who is going to do it needs to happen before you use any AI tool. This is where companies are making the biggest mistakes. They don't integrate the change management. They don't change the organizational design. They continue business as usual, and then they buy a couple of tools or they try out, and then they start wiping out people out of their jobs and just announce redundancies. So if you are the head of organizational design, especially in HR or strategy, I think the first step is piloting. There are always AI pioneers in your companies that are willingly are not yet there. These superstars are shy to actually bring these initiatives. And those are the ones that are going to actually show you what the organizational design can work on a small scale and medium and the big scale.
Thanks, Arthur. Then there are a couple of quick questions just on your slides. Someone's asked, what is the source of the slide that you used on finance? Where's that information from?
Finance was probably from Gartner, but I can follow up as we will be sending a two-pager from this presentation with the sources inside.
Perfect. And then Irina is asking, do you think there's any potential for ethics professionals to enter companies working with AI, or will the ethics part of AI development always continue to be handled by programmers?
Yes. Ethics is going to be number one position. Now, I don't think we realize that actually AI can replace programmers. You don't need to know how to generate AI because AI will generate an AI tool for you. So the ethics, those who are really considering the social impact, ethical impact, values, everything that we have been disregarding so far, please contact me, step ahead, because we need more people in that area that are willing to consider the implications on a human level more than anything else. Also, one of the criteria that I genuinely have when working with corporate companies, we don't engage with companies that do not put ethical and the purpose ahead of any implementation. So that needs to be signed. I call it a zero pledge with zero discrimination, zero implications on people, society in general.
And then I think we have time for one quick final question. So I'm just going to pick one out of here because I think it will interest a lot of people. What advice would you give to people going through education now? What kind of things should people study to have a future in AI?
Well, excellent question. Actually, I'm getting involved with one of the education projects in Kosovo where the unemployment is more than 20% and immigration is 22%. So obviously, education so far is not serving us at all. So, and I wrote actually post on LinkedIn, which is explaining the traditional and the remote education, remote AI-powered education. Skills of the future is definitely strategic thinking, because you don't need to know what to learn. Information is useless. You need to think how to learn. Number two is agility change management. If you are not accepting change and if you are not changing on a daily basis and constantly evolving, it will be extremely hard time for you because you will realize that after all of the degrees, subjects and tests and the marks and exams, you will still not have a job because everything will be taken over by AI. The third skill that I would definitely advise is to learn about AI from a business angle, not from a tech angle, because that will evolve and it's changing on literally hourly basis. Companies are just launching better and better products. But how is business future going to change based on it? What kind of jobs are going to be relevant is something that is the skill of the future. So if you would like also to know a little bit more about the educational part itself, I can please connect with me on LinkedIn. I would like to share some of the insights that we have with working with the government on this topic.
Thanks, Arta. And thanks everyone else for joining. There are a few more questions, so we'll try and get around to putting something together and putting it on our next gen page so you can see all the answers in the future. Thanks again for joining, and I hope everyone has a lovely day.
Thank you everyone for all the questions and interaction engagement, and we will come back to you. Please watch out on the email that we will be sending to you with two pagers and all the information.
Thank you.